For my whole career, I've used D'Addario strings.
This is the one that I use live with Megadeth, and I love it.
I've been with D'Addario my whole career, even when I was playing bass in Van Halen. D'Addario for life. And I say it right, D'Addario.
For just one like and one subscribe a day, you can help us three losers continue to bring you the freshest guitar content on the entire internet.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys. We are at Soldier Field in Chicago, inside the belly of the beast, and we are with Darren of System of a Down and Scars on Broadway.
How are you guys?
Sir, thank you so much for taking the time. I can't wait to talk all of this, and I know later we'll talk with Patrick about your actual rig out on stage, but tell me about what happened the other night when you were walking through Wrigleyville. That was such a cool moment that I got to see. I think it was on Twitter or maybe Instagram. But yeah, tell me about that.
Well, we just were going around town just taking pictures because we did it in New York. And we're like, hey, let's do it in Chicago, too. Just stuff to post on Instagram.
Yeah.
And we went to that Big Bean.
Oh, yeah. Blendling.
And then when we were there, we're like, yeah, let's go to Wrigley. Let's take a picture in front of it. And I had a Dodgers jacket on. So we're like, let's play. Let's wear a Dodgers jacket there. And so we get there and my friend Greg Waterman, he's taking pictures of me and my cousins. A couple of my cousins were there, too. And while I'm taking pictures, I hear someone start the intro of Needles.
Yeah.
And this band was playing so good that I thought it was actually like System of a Down version of Needles. But then the vocals started and my cousin was like, I think it's karaoke. Because the band actually like really sounded good, man.
Cool.
And so I was like, let's go over there. And we walked across the street and I saw it's like this System cover band. I mean, you know how many stars had to align for me to get there? And I walked in and, you know, there was like 35, 40 people in there max. Mm-hmm. And if you went to see a System cover band, you must be a really big System
Super
of a Down
fan.
Band. And if you are a System of a cover band, you're probably a pretty big fan too, right? So I just walked straight up over there and I just went right into the front of the stage and I started doing this. And, you know, the guitar player's kind of looking down and then he spots me and the most priceless moment was like his eyes just like opened up and the singer was like, what the fuck is going on?
Out of body experience, I bet, for them.
For me too. It was like a completely spontaneous thing. And then the people that were there that were fans were so excited. And the look on everybody's face was priceless. And it was one of the coolest experiences. And as a fan of other bands, I could imagine what I would feel like if it was cool. And then I joined them on stage for a song. The whole thing lasted like 15 minutes tops. I walked in, I got on stage, I sang the song, I walked out, took a couple pictures, and I left.
Yeah.
So I could only imagine what everyone was thinking after I left, because it was so quick.
Yeah.
And it was like, I could only imagine the vibe in there after I left. It must have been, you know, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, like a total whiplash moment, like, what just happened?
Yeah, and, you know, it's something that I'll remember forever, and I'm sure they'll remember forever, too. And I'm telling you, the band, if you see the video, you'll think these dudes rehearsed this, because he was singing the parts, I was singing the parts, and they were so tight, they played it so well. And, it was just really, really cool, really spontaneous.
Yeah, the stars aligned, like you said.
Yeah, like, you better chance getting hit by lightning than
Yeah.
Like, for all of us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man. Like, you just being in Wrigleyville, your cousin hearing it, your mm-hmm. friend hearing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there you go. You're on stage. That is a moment those people will never forget.
Yeah, me too.
It sounds like you too,
yeah,
man.
Me too.
I got to ask, because I saw an interview you did, and you've had some bad luck with gear. A lot mm-hmm. of guitars stolen. Mm-hmm. Are these the same cousins that took your first guitar and sold it to the pawn shop? That
you're still... shit. He's right there. He's going to be pissed. Because I always give him like a hard time about this. He's
you're
right.
You're a good dude.
He's right there. It's okay. But I've had a lot of guitars stolen from me, man. I mean, that one wasn't stolen, but then the guitar that I bought after that was stolen out of my dad's car when I was like 16, 17 years
yeah.
old. And then I had a couple Fenders that I used to play in the early club days my first Iceman I ever had was a 79 Iceman, and we were on tour with Fear Factory, and all of those guitars got stolen. So I've had about, and then once we had actually been a band that was, it might have been the year we were headlining the Ozfest or something.
Okay.
And I think we're the only band that headlined the Ozfest as Cybermozzy. But production manager came into my bus. He's like, that white SG, and I'm sure people have seen me play this with pictures of this white SG. Well,
yeah.
That white SG got stolen right off stage.
Wow.
And I was like, how could this happen? I get it in the club days, but now we're like playing amphitheaters and we have all
security.
This security and the venue security, and someone just walks out with my guitar. So I've lost a lot of guitars
yeah.
through the years.
Well, speaking of guitars, you like you said, sounds like it was a necessity at the start. I know you alluded to those Strats. So I think there was a Big Apple Strats mm-hmm, with the humbuckers. Mm-hmm. The Iceman's a story that you had told that I heard recently was you just went to the Guitar Center after that first check on the album cycle when you're getting ready to record. You're like, hey, I want to try that because it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, you've had 20, 25 plus years of other guitars, SGs, 335s. What have you always been chasing or want out of a guitar that you're kind of, you know, always looking for the next one? Or maybe you're happy now, but like, what have you always been after?
My sound is somewhere between metal and rock.
Mm.
And I'm always trying to find that, because when you're too metal, the open chords get thin and mm-hmm. compressed. When you're too rock, you don't get the djent. Right?
Yeah.
Now, djent is actually a genre.
Yeah.
Of music. I hate that. But anyway. So when you, I'm trying, because I have a lot of open chord parts.
Yeah.
It's not all muted heavy metal stuff with what we do. There are songs like Radio Video. And then my clean tone has to be like, I just plug into the amp.
Yeah.
I don't have.
Yeah.
I have a phaser. I have a delay that comes on when I'm doing little solo stuff mm-hmm. on stage. But the clean tone is pretty much put on the rock dirty tone with the gain turned kind of down,
okay.
but giving it enough gain to give it a little bit of hair.
Okay.
And my dirty tone is on the, because I'm using Friedman's right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that modified Marshall JMP kind of tone.
Yeah.
And the Friedman, the when I was using Marshall, Dave Friedman modified those.
Yeah.
So when he had his own amp, there was just a little bit more of options on the Friedman of
okay.
fine-tuning certain things. But it's in the same world, it's in the same ballpark, and
yeah.
that's kind of what I'm looking for, is that in my heavy tone, in between the rock, in between the metal, kind of thing.
Yeah, and yeah. It, like you're saying, you don't have any boost pedals or drive pedals or
nothing,
anything.
Nothing.
It's just the amp.
Just the amp.
Tube distortion.
And the guitar and the pickups.
Yeah.
And, you know, all that.
Adding together.
It's very simple, not complicated.
Yeah. Have you ever thought or tried or even entertained the idea of doing modelers or anything like that?
Modelers?
Yeah, like an Axe FX or a Kemper. Yeah.
I mean, I don't have anything against it, but it's just, I guess I'm old school like that.
Yeah.
You know, I just, there's something about tubes, amp, you know, all that
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. And like, obviously, we're talking to you because we're a guitar outlet, and you've been on our upcoming issue of Premier Guitar Cover, but you're a songwriter at heart. At least that's what I think of when it comes to you, both on your own project and with System, is like you're a songwriter. using guitar as your songwriting maybe tool, but are there other ways that you get to writing songs beyond just the guitar?
Any way it comes to me.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people know he's a, you know, guitar player of System of a Down, but I don't really consider myself like there are many better guitar players than me. I use guitar as a tool to compose, write songs.
Mm-hmm.
I have more drum and vocal idols than I have guitar idols.
Yeah.
I love Van Halen, but my favorite part of Van Halen is Alex.
Yeah.
So I don't know. For me, it's all comes together in a song. The guitar kind of came accidentally because my parents didn't buy me drums.
Can't turn them off.
You can't turn them off. I'm sure you heard me say that story. So I'm not like this guy who's just like, I'm so obsessed about guitar and gear and all this stuff. I'm really not. I spent a lot of, when my parents didn't buy me the drums, it was like me and this guitar in the room, and I was like, all right, let's
see what I can get.
And I spent a lot of time, and then I, you know, learned how to riff, and I always had good rhythm, and I think I'm all right. You know, I'm no Yngwie Malmsteen, but I was never trying to be.
Yeah.
Even though I respect guitar players like that, but even when I listen to guitar player, I mean, I love guys like Jerry Garcia, Roy Buchanan. I mean,
really?
Oh, I love that guy. These are the guys that I really like listening to. And when I solo, that's kind of when I solo. That's kind of what comes out of me. Those type of guitar players I really love.
Well, even in your playing, especially on stage, is reminiscent of Roy in the sense that it's raw. It's you just trying to give it your all, and that is the energy that comes through. That doesn't matter. Genre doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I'm not a shredder.
Yeah, but it's more about you putting your energy in.
But I do solo up there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have too many solos on the album because I put them in where it works. So I'm never trying to force in a guitar solo. But up there, we go through these little moments on stage, little jammy things that we extend songs or whatever. So I get a chance to do my little solo thing. But when I do, it's always these little melodic, you know, solos that, and that's just the kind of solos I like to listen to.
Mm. Now, I know that you're getting back to your record that just came out, is that Addicted to the Violence, the title track, was a thing that I know that there's a lot of pride to you as a songwriter, because that song is really speaks to you and where you're at in this point as a songwriter and artistic, you know,
when you
creator.
When you write a song that's the type of song that you never wrote before, but it still has your identity in it, that's kind of, I'm not trying to achieve that, but when that happens, because when you're trying to do anything, it kind of sounds like you're trying.
It's forced.
So I'm never really trying to do anything. I listen to a lot of different kind of music. All over the board. I mean, Miles Davis is a guitar influence to me. Like, vocalists are influences to me. So, when you go to places as a songwriter, and that I haven't gone there before, it's just a proud moment, and you write this song that you're proud of, which has happened through the years with different songs, whether it's a System song, Scar songs.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone asks me, oh, what's your one of the best songs you think you've ever written? You know, I have, they're not my necessary favorites, but I remember when I wrote that song, I was like, this is taking you places you've never been to before. And it feels like you're evolving and you're not repeating yourself.
Mm.
You know, I've never tried to write Chop Suey more than once.
Yeah.
And I never tried to write Chop Suey when I wrote Chop Suey.
Yeah.
Like, that was that. You know, it wasn't like, oh, this is a success, I gotta start cooking cutting this sound. I always respected bands that had different energies and moods in their songs, but when you heard those different songs, you knew it was, their identity was still there, whether it was a ballad, whether it was a soft song, whether it was a hard song. Never comparing myself to the Beatles, but if you listen to the Beatles, you'll hear Ubladi Ublada, you'll hear In My Life, I Love It, and then you'll hear Helter Skelter, you know what I mean? So that's like diverse moods different colors, different emotions, and yeah. as human beings, you're not always angry.
Yeah.
You're not always sad, you're not always happy. Sometimes I wake up and, you know, life takes you in different places, and I express that without editing myself and saying, well, I gotta be heavy all the fucking time. Mm-hmm. And even when I'm heavy, you know, one of our heaviest songs is Cigarro, and but I'm like, my cock is much bigger. And so the lyrics are like, not like, the devil got me, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, so.
There's enough of those bands.
Yeah, so even with the heavy stuff mixes in this humor.
Yeah.
You know, and.
It's layered.
I think that's what kind of, if, you know, if I have an identity in my writing, it's that dip. In one album, you'll hear a song that could be played on maybe three different radio stations,
yeah.
you know?
Like, yeah.
And that's the same way with this new album. You know, there's a song called Shame Game. It's very psychedelic.
Yeah.
Kind of gets proggy in the middle. But then you have Killing Spree that's kind of heavy, but has this humor in the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And everything you do is always has melody in it. That's kind of a backbone. No yeah. matter what, whether it's writing or songwriting, it's always there too.
Yeah, and people say your stuff's hooky, and I'm not trying to necessarily write hooks. It just, look, man, we all have a different voice. You didn't pick what your voice sounds like. I didn't pick what my voice sounds, but there's a natural thing that comes out of us. And when I write songs, it's not really sat there and thought, well, I'm going to put together this and this, and then I want to bring in this stuff. It's just, it all spills out of me a certain way, and I'm not trying to force it. It just kind of comes out of me that way. And mm-hmm. what you hear with both of my bands is how it just spills out of me yeah. without too much, you know, sitting there saying, well, I'm going to sit there and I want to put heavy, and then and when this part comes, I want it to be this style. It's the styles that I love are all in my head,
mm-hmm.
and they just kind of sometimes come out of me in one song. I get into musical phases of what I'm listening to at that moment in my life or for that next couple months, or I just dive into something that kind of gets triggered accidentally, and next thing you know, like, oh, I'm listening to that for like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
When it comes to someone like Miles Davis, there's this I don't give a shit vibe about him, and I like what he says in his interviews. I like the way he views music, or viewed music.
Yeah.
And you know, you see his albums and the way it progressed and the things that he was doing as it progressed from his early jazz stuff, then when you get to Bitches Brew and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Experiment, abstract. It's abstract. And I've always considered, my dad is an abstract artist, has painted paintings in our home my whole life, does till this day. And even though it's hooky and it's catchy, but I've always taken an abstract approach to songwriting, to the verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. But I put it together sometimes in a very, I try to do it in kind of like a different way. We always, when System of a Down came out, we didn't see ourselves as like some commercial band. We thought we were doing something that was like kind of out there and unique.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone caught on to it, and it became like we're playing this huge stadium today.
Yeah.
But System of a Down was, we were kind of considered ourselves a very artsy kind of type of thing,
yeah.
you know? And so yeah, I mean, when so people like Miles Davis, I look at them and you know, it's just, there is this doing it with freedom, doing what I want to do, you know? And I don't really write songs for anybody else. I write songs to amuse myself. I don't even put out Scars out. I don't put one out every other year. I have a whole bunch of songs that I've never put out. I do it for myself first. I please myself first. And then if I put out a song and people don't like it, it doesn't change my opinion on the song. I know where I went somewhere, and when I wrote that, I know what happened. I lit up, you know, in my living room. I was like, oh, this is great. This is starting to form itself, and this is forming itself in a really cool way, and I enjoy it. Yeah. Like playing with a toy, you know what I mean? I'm playing with a toy. I always bring this, you know, comparison is where like a child plays with the toy, but he's not playing for you. He's playing for his own amusement.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I put out a record, it's kind of like, all right, you know, I've played with this toy enough, and I think I'm done with it, and now I'm sharing it with everybody else.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Yeah. Kind of like a Rubik's Cube in a way, where you get together and then it's
The songs are kind of puzzle-like sometimes.
Yeah. We got a sneak peek at the guitar boat with some of your guitars. A lot of black and gold, but one I wanted to ask you about specifically is the Flying V with the kind of standard Les Paul headstock.
Yeah.
How did you come to, like, was that an idea you had, or just someone threw it out there and you're like, yeah, I'll play that?
I just always liked the way Albert King's V looked with that headstock. And he's just, you know, a great guitar player. And I'm lucky enough that Gibson and Ibanez makes me guitars. And when we were making a couple of Vs, I was like, I want it with just like the standard kind of Gibson headstock, because I don't know, just as it was kind of a tribute to him.
Yeah, it's a beautiful guitar. Like I said, black and gold hardware and stuff. It's a sharp guitar.
I don't think his is a Gibson. I think Lucy is the name of that guitar. B.B. King is Lucille. His is Lucy. But it's kind of a tribute to him. And
the one thing I want to ask before we move on and talk to Patrick, I saw these picks, and I thought this was a gag or a joke, or at least something maybe you give to fans, but this is really what you play with, and you've been playing with this for years, you said.
It's comfortable.
I mean,
that's there's a certain kind of way that you hit the string. I don't know, it's just become when I first started playing, I didn't play that, but I remember that I used to get a little bleeding in my hand and my finger. And that's what kind of started me getting into. I used to play one that was a little more rounded.
Okay.
And one day, one of my old other guitar techs in the past kind of cut them pointier, so I got Dunlop to like make them pointier.
Yeah.
And now it's like the funny thing is, if a guitar player is like, hey man, you got a pick? I'm like, yeah. They're like, shit.
They're like, yeah.
No thanks. Serge uses those too when he's playing on stage, but that's because he always would borrow my picks.
Yeah.
And he got used to playing those.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, when he has his own picks that he has on stage when he does a couple songs where he plays some rhythm guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But because we shared rehearsal studio, you know, we played in the same band, and I just met him, he had just started learning how to play the guitar.
Okay.
So I was the guy that was giving him picks.
Yeah, feeding him.
And so, you know, he just got used to those picks too, so.
Yeah, and it's so they got a big surface area, but pretty flexy. They're not like hard picks.
No, they're not like rock
rigid,
hard solid,
but
they give me this kind of, I don't know, the way I strike the string and there's something, you know, the oud?
Yeah.
You know, those long kind of, the way if you see an oud player, the way they strike the strings, I feel like I kind of strike it in the same way at certain points, and that kind of gives me that extra
clearance, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Darren, I really appreciate it. I know we got to get out there and talk to Patrick about the rest of your rig, but I really appreciate
it. Thank you for doing this.
And congrats on the new record,
man. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
everybody. I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario's been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns.
All right, everyone, now we're with Patrick as tech. Patrick, how you doing?
So far, so good.
Yeah, man. So you just joined, okay, I shouldn't say you just joined the camp. You've been with the camp for a while, but yeah. You switched sides.
Yep, I worked with Shavo for the better part of a decade, but okay. I was needed on this side of the stage, so here we are.
Yeah, well, so talk to me about what's going on. Obviously, we got a lot of black and gold guitars.
Yeah, so, Darren's favorite color scheme.
Yeah, I mean, who can argue with it? I love a black guitar with gold hardware, so yeah. Talk to me, Bill. Let's start going through the guitars. Maybe, I don't know which one's like a main one or one that gets used the most, but let's just start down the line.
Okay, we can start with the OG here.
Okay. Yeah, I imagine a lot of Ibanez's and SGs.
Yeah, this is kind of where it all started, I guess.
Wow.
He's a classic Gibson guy for the most part. Got into Ibanez at some point.
Yeah.
And fell in love. So this is usually what we start the show with.
Okay. What can you tell people? Like, do you know a year or anything specific to that?
Not specifically.
Okay.
I can tell you that this is brand new, hot off the presses. Basically, a newer version of the classic. All Gibson Cups, custom shop, custom contour, Seymour Duncan custom shop pickups.
Wow.
He usually prefers the pearly gates, and in some guitars, depending on the tone, we'll go with these Saturday Night Specials.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good for people to know. What should we know about strings as you're pulling out the guitars?
Strings have evolved.
Okay.
We've had a couple different versions since I've been working with Darren. We're using the Ernie Ball custom set. This is 10 to 50. Name on the package even. That's exciting.
Oh, perfect.
Potentially a signature set in the works for retail. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, do you know why this? Because I believe last time it was, or before that, it was 10 to 52s.
Right.
So talk to me about the transition or the adjustment here.
10 to 52 is a, you know, light top, heavy bottom. I think he likes his strings a little more slinky right now.
Okay.
So it's just a vibe change.
Yeah.
More than anything.
What should we know about tunings? Maybe either one of those ones that we saw so far.
Tuning is the same across the board. He's a drop C kind of guy.
Okay.
So all of the system catalog, I believe, is drop C. Makes it easy if he just wants to call an audible and swap out guitars.
Yeah, like, so again, only 2 weeks in, few shows in. Is that kind of the vibe when it goes to being on stage? If he likes a guitar, he kind of rolls with it, or are there changes?
I think we'll usually do a switch. Maybe 10 songs in or halfway through the set.
Okay.
He'll get comfortable with the guitar in the dressing room. We'll have a designated starter, and then he'll switch, possibly for tuning purposes if necessary, but usually just, you know, vibe change. We'll go to the Iceman after the SG.
Yeah.
And if it stays in tune, he doesn't throw it or, you know, drop it.
Yeah.
He'll roll with it if he's comfortable with it.
Cool. And, well, I'll bring out some more of these treats.
Okay. This one's on the bench right now.
Yeah.
This is another Iceman. This has the secret ninja binding, black, so virtually invisible, but at the custom shop they said, well, no one will see it. He says, I'll see it, I'll know it's there.
Yeah.
So, and it sounds great, so
killer,
this is one of the favorites. It's probably the main right now during the show.
Do you know if there's Seymour Duncans in that, or if that's more like Ibanez?
Yeah, this is all Duncan now.
Okay, so he's all Duncan.
Yeah, when they come from the custom shop, they're already wired up.
Okay.
Typically, after the stock production pickups, then we'll usually change them out for a custom shop.
Okay, and in same configuration, Saturday Night Special?
Yeah, pearly gates in these.
Okay.
I think the Saturday Night Specials reside in the V, because it's a little bit different tonally.
Let's go there, let's see the V.
The V, pull out the V. another hot off the presses.
Wow.
Black and gold, nice and shiny. Pretty monster. This you don't see a lot.
Not no.
The stock V headstock, yeah. But more like an LP headstock. So, but all Gibson.
And I see a 335 there, or is it a 55?
This is another new one from the custom shop.
Oh, wow.
Same color scheme. Only thing he didn't love about it was the Grovers as opposed to the classic Plus and Wafflebacks. We'll probably change that out when they're available.
Okay.
Again, same pickup configuration. These definitely sound different. This rings more on stage because of the hollow body action.
Yeah.
But a sweet guitar, and it has a vibe.
Yeah, I know for a long time he's been using a 62 SG and a 67 or late 60s 335 and kind of combine them for like studio tones.
Yeah.
So it's rad to see the 335 get represented in that too. Is there a certain song that the 335 comes out in, or is it just, again, choice?
So far, it's like, you know, changes from day to day.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been pretty consistent with opening with the SG, moving to the Iceman. If there's a time where he wants to bring it out or a certain song, maybe they call an audible, change the set, he might say, I need the 335 for this. And there we go.
Is he making signals to you on stage for those types of audibles, or is it just like a nod, or how's that work when you're seeing him on stage and a guitar change needs to happen?
It'll be pretty obvious when it needs to happen. Yeah, if something goes horribly wrong, then, you know, we'll swap out. Otherwise, it's a designated spot in the set.
Okay.
Or when I do the guitar change, he'll say, hey, later on, I need this, or okay. I need this for this song, okay. That kind of thing. So
I see a few more Icemans in there. Are those? Yeah.
Custom shop.
The not so stealth binding.
Not so stealth binding. yeah. Just a little bit different vibe than the Ninja binding.
Yeah.
And yeah, same pickups. A little bit different tone, but they all sound great.
Now you're figuring out each other's like workflow and almost like a language in terms of guitar player, guitar tech. What have you discovered so far in terms of like what he wants out of his guitars, whether it's sonically or setups?
Sonically, he likes a lot of bite.
Okay.
You know, that he can articulate, get pick attack without having to dig in too hard.
Okay.
And yeah, tonally, same thing with the amps. Wants a lot of presence, you know, not super metal, but not so subdued, like rock metal.
Yeah.
Kind of bridging the gap.
Yeah.
You know, so we get as close as we can without getting too, you know, sucked out in the mid-range.
And what about setups when it comes to guitar? Because I hear this a lot when we do these rig rundowns. It's like, I want to fight with my guitar, so higher action, a little more fight in the guitar, you know, when it comes to playing. Or does he want that action low, make it a little easier?
Fairly low.
Okay.
You know, again, slinky strings. We don't want it buzzing, but we want it to be easy to play.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm not so much of a, you know, ruler measurement type guy, more of a feel, you know, so I'll set it up to my personal taste.
Okay.
And if he has any comments or criticisms, then we'll make adjustments, but he's usually pretty spot on. So if I come into a gig like this on short notice, and it's if it ain't broke, don't break it.
Yeah.
So they're all pretty close, and if there's adjustments, then he'll let me know.
Got it. Well, dude, I think that wraps up guitars. Let's switch sides and talk amps.
Excellent.
All right, Patrick, we know from all history and Darren's interviews and stuff that he's an amp guy, amp distortion, amp dude. Tell me about the rig.
Yeah, we like to stay analog over here.
Okay.
So tubes. No modelers, no simulators, none of that.
Yeah.
Old school. I mean, Darren likes to plug a guitar into a cable into an amp, so we try to stick as close as we can to that. There have been some changes recently. It's sort of evolving, so it's not finalized. I'm looking for points of failure, potential failure that we can eliminate,
yeah,
and increase reliability and maximize tone. One of the things that is changing is this is a great unit, but it only steps down voltage. We want to step up voltage. I did some experiments with him before we went out and did South America and found that this had been sucked out, you know, to sub 120.
Wow.
And I said, do you like that? And he said, I don't know, what is that? So I said, this is dropping your voltage. And I put it back to 120, and all of a sudden the Friedman started aggressively speaking. So yeah. I said, you want constant voltage. So we're taking this out. We're going to get a rack mount Variac built by Cruise Amplification.
Okay.
So we can keep a stable 120 or above.
Yeah.
We're good today.
I was going to ask, what is a sweet spot for you? Because it sounds like you know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
120, 122, it's happy.
And is that kind of for the Friedman? Because I know we have a guy, John Bollinger, typically plays Fenders. And he likes to bring his down much lower than that.
Yeah, Fenders and vintage Marshalls tend to sound better at, you know, 114, 115 maybe, as opposed to, you know, the modern, more aggressive amps. They need that push for the speaker.
Got it.
So we want you, the tubes honking.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, he's used so many amps over the years. Obviously, everyone can catalog it. Internet will dive deep.
Yeah.
But it looks like he's landed on some Freedmans.
Yeah, the Freedmans are good. This is the older version. This was the B-rig. These are the newer versions. They were the A-rig. And I said, why don't we just take these? We'll split them A and B, use these for the clean and these for the dirty, since these are the more aggressive sounding amps.
Yeah.
So that's why we changed that. And I've been kind of transitioning this into being a more redundant rig. It's not truly redundant because the front end of the rack, basically, we can switch and relay this over to the B-rig without having to have a complete redundant system. So that way we can use the same RF, which makes a lot of sense.
What are the actual amps? I can't.
The BE100, old version, new version. And they've added a few extra features for, you know, tonal voicing and channels. And for him, it's not really necessary, but he likes the fundamental tone of it.
Yeah. What have the conversations been like when it comes to what he wants end result tone to be and the sound and the amps and stuff?
I think I did mention not quite metal, you know?
Yeah.
The word gent comes into play. We don't want to go all the way to, you know, a sucked out EQ kind of a sound. He wants it to be mainly like a heavy rock tone.
Okay.
With just a little more aggression, a little more saturation.
All right.
And on stage, he's looking for brightness. So because he's using a single 12 for clean, a single 412 for clean and a single 412 for dirty, it's kind of shooting past his knees.
Uh-huh.
So we rely on the wedges and the side fills to bring up the highs and have it so it sounds like the cabinet all around the stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what speakers are in those cabs based on them being clean and dirty?
They're the same speakers, different heads, but he's currently using the Celestion G1270s.
Okay.
And that's part of our upcoming experiments. We may change that out.
Speakers, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big tonal change when that people kind of overlook the speakers, but that can be a big change.
Yeah, I noticed in rehearsal he thought it was a little mushy, and I said, I think your speakers are tired. So we switched to the spare cab and it immediately had more push and a little more attack.
Okay.
So we're going to change out all the speakers completely, and then while we're doing that, we're going to try some different things, maybe some vintage 30s, maybe some other wattages, and see what his ear prefers.
And real quick before we move on to the rack here, what's like a kind of an EQ, again, a snapshot, Soldier Field night two of systems shows here in Chicago, but what does he look for when you're EQing the two amps?
Pay no attention to the tape because it's always changing. But
yeah.
The basic setup, again, looking for very saturated but not mushy, a lot of attack, a lot of brightness.
Okay.
He doesn't use in-ear monitors, so we're relying on wedges and side fills again to bring that out, cut through the cymbals
old
and the
school.
High end on the bass.
Yeah.
So, it's a real rock band.
Yeah.
You know, there's no computers. There's no click tracks involved. It's, you know, it's four guys jamming.
Yeah. What should we know about the rack gear here above the Amper X?
We got rid of the old Whirlwind stuff recently and went with the radial. Just cleaner, quieter, more reliable. Accent, of course, for RF. I just dropped this in so I could put the banner on there. And... yeah, that's about it. It's pretty simple. The GCX is just looping a couple of pedals. He's always used the same two pedals, delay and phaser.
Okay.
In combination, either delay by itself, phaser by itself, or both.
Do you know which ones those specifically?
We're using the MXR Phase 90.
Okay.
And typically the Boss Digital Delay.
Okay.
But we have the MXR Carbon Copy as well. I'm trying to convince him that might be the way to go.
Yeah. What about, is it orange script or anything, or is it like an EVH Phase 90?
It's a standard, you know, not a vintage, but a modern production.
Yeah,
Phase 90.
Got a noise gate I see here.
Yeah, a little bit of gate. Don't tell him this because he doesn't know and he doesn't like gates, but I put it in there. So basically I'm running A and B, A in front of the amp for just a little bit of feedback control.
Okay.
Not chopping any tone, and then B just enough for gain noise, not chopping any tone. So he can walk to his cabinet, get feedback, and have a good time.
So it's literally just two pedals, or is there anything else that's out there?
There's just the two pedals.
Wow, and no distortion, no boost, it's all amped.
Yeah, 100% natural, tubes and speakers.
Man, I really think we covered it all, and I really appreciate it because opening band's about to start in a few minutes. Patrick?
I do have to mention
Orbel. From Scars.
Yeah, he operates the pedalboard during the show.
Okay.
He knows the songs, obviously. He's changing patches, and he's going from clean to dirty. He's affecting delay times and turning things on and off. So, you know, it's a partnership between him and I, which is why we're slowly changing this to not screw up his gig and let him wrap his head around it before we do any major modifications to the rig.
And I imagine he's nearby in a spot on stage where he can, you know...
Yeah, he usually sits right in front of me. He's got visual contact with Darren, and I'm just right above him. He's sitting down, and I'm looking over his head, so we keep an eye on things.
Well, Patrick, I really appreciate it. I know it's Thank a new you. Gig, but it sounds like you got it under control.
It's a fun gig. It's a challenge, and, you know, like I said, these guys are, you know, practically family now, so I don't mind changing positions on the stage.
Yeah, man, you're still in the family.
Yeah.
All right, guys, here you go. Rig rundown.
We only stock D'Addario strings is because D'Addario strings are perfect.
When people come in here, they think that we get them for free or something like that, but we don't. We have no other reason except for dependability and tone.